Welcome to the wundersame Fahrradwelt, your cycling podcast about fixed gear, gravel and ultracycling. Hosted and produced by the one and only Johanna Janke.
Welcome to the first English episode of the wundersame Fahrradwelt. I haven't done this before, so this is a try and I'm really looking forward to your feedback about it. How do you like it? And if I should do some more English episodes or not? Because as you know, I mean, there's lots of interesting people around the world that don't speak German. And so far, this podcast has only been in German. Yeah, just send me feedback so I know how you think about this and whether I should do more English episodes in future or not. One thing, we had a little bit of problems. Well, not really problems, but the internet connection was not 100% perfect. So especially in the beginning and in the end of the podcast, there's sometimes some words missing. So I don't think that this is a big problem because you still understand what we are talking about. It's just one word missing. But if you do have questions and if you do think you need clarifying, don't hesitate to send me a message or make a comment under my Instagram post so I can answer your question for everyone. And yeah, so but I don't think it's really a problem. I just want to say, I mean, this is about recording digitally. There's, you are relying on the internet connection and yeah, that's sometimes these things happen. Yeah, I'm really happy with this interview. I think Sami gives us a great insight into her work as a community manager for Komoot. That said, Komoot is also sponsoring this episode, which I think is awesome and it fits perfectly. And yeah, it's a good way to talk about Komoot and see what an app that is supposed to be for the outdoors doing right now, how they are coping with the situation. Find it very interesting. And as you know, I'm also an ambassador for Komoot and you can find a lot of nice collections on my Komoot profile already. I have linked the profile in the show notes as well as Sami's profile. Additionally to this, Sami is producing films and I've also linked some of her work and her profile. And yeah, just if you're curious. Yeah. And now, I hope you are all well and that you're all coping with the situation. And yeah, and maybe I can, shorten the time a little bit with this episode and yeah, hope you enjoy it. Hi, Sami. How are you?
Hi, Johanna. I'm great. I'm good. I'm hanging in here in Girona and I'm good. How about you?
Yeah, I'm hanging here in Hamburg, but I think my situation is a little bit better than yours at the moment. But we'll talk about it later. First, let me introduce you. You are my friend, Sami Sauri from Spain, and we know each other from fixed gear racing. I think we first met in 2016, probably. It's when you started.
I'm pretty bad at dates. I'm not going to lie. So I'll let you do that.
Great. I'll check. Maybe it's not so important, but we've raced against each other for a while and yeah, hung out together at the Reto Crits. You were also part of the organizing committee in Barcelona at the Reto Crit in Barcelona. I remember that you wanted to organize the ride to a surfing spot once. I think for some reason it didn't take place, but I can't remember why. I think you were sick, weren't you? Something happened.
No, it actually took place. The banana split. The banana split ride that we rode up to Tibidabo and then like a loop of nearly like, I think it was like 40Ks or something like that. But you know, the day after Red Hook, so there were some people in city bikes to not have to ride their fixed gear bikes. There were other people on like a 51, 15 gear going up mountains. I remember Fleur doing that. It was, yeah, it happened, but it was a bit of a fun ride, not as it should have happened.
Right, because I remember it should have taken place before Retrocrit on the Wednesday night, as that was tradition in Barcelona, and then somehow it got moved.
Yeah, that's, you're totally right. It got moved to the day after, and it got on that like particular race. My sort of got a massive infection a week before, and just it came into like a bubble of like liquid poison inside my hip, and from nothing, from riding like 3 hours the day before, and then suddenly the night over, I woke up. And then I had to go to the hospital, and then they said, oh, no, this is infected, just compress. And then, like, after that, I just, like, fainted on the pharmacy and hit my head as well. So there was a bit of, like, a long story behind that red hook. But I did race, and I did enjoy a lot. And then I did do the ride, but the day after that.
Okay, now I know what happened. 4-5 years ago.
Yeah, I couldn't remember.
Yeah, okay. Now it's good that we finally talked about it.
Is that the red hood crit that we both crash?
No, that's I didn't the crash. That's the, no, one the one that we both crashed in, and people who know me know the picture of me where I like do a roll through the air. That was 2000 and.
It was the year after
17.
That, yeah, that's right.
The year after. Wow, well, that's already such a long time ago.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It anyway, looks like yesterday.
It does, doesn't it? And yeah. Are you waiting for the Red Hook Crit to come back?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I'm not. I don't think so, and I'm not waiting for it. To be honest, I'll probably, if it comes back, I will be there and I will be racing. But you know, my head space is a bit in another way. I love the adrenaline, and I'm trying to find even other sports right now, which I might talk to you afterwards about it. But like, no, that's not like kind of like even the last Red Hook Milano, I felt I quit 2 laps. After we started, because I was like, you girls are nuts. Like we were going 41 average on a bike on a, you know, a square. And I didn't want to risk it, to be honest. But then I keep risking it in other stuff, which is really fun, but it's by myself, not with like a bunch of girls, you know? So I don't know. It's hard to tell if I will do it again or not. Probably yes.
That's a problem. It's addictive. And exactly. I feel exactly the same. But you know, when you do risky things by yourself, you're kind of in control. You can control the risks. And in Retrocrit, you can't control others. I mean, just look at what happened to our crash. Well, the crash we are talking about is you were avoiding a crash before you, and I didn't want to ride on across you and hurt you, so I avoided you and did a turn.
Went over me.
I did what?
You went over me like you. I remember I had your chain in my back. Actually,
no,
as a mark.
No. I avoided this. Or I just rode straight into the barrier. I didn't touch anyone.
Then somebody else crashed.
Yeah, yeah. Someone before you. I think Kira McQuitty did
Remember somebody.
And then you crashed into someone, and I avoided both of you, and went into the barrier instead because of the straw. If there wasn't these straw bags, I think I would have not been able to, ride around.
Yes.
But anyway.
Yeah.
This is going to be like an old fixie.
totally.
Podcast. But anyway, we are here now. I forgot to say I'm in Hamburg and you are in Girona. And that's, what I was mentioning earlier. Your situation, corona-wise, is a little different to mine right now. as most of my listeners are German, don't know, because now that the podcast is in English, we might have more international listeners. So in Germany, we are allowed to ride outside by ourselves or with one other person. And this gives us a lot of freedom. And compared to your situation, this is like heaven. And yeah, I would like to ask you to tell us about your situation a little bit.
So first of all, you guys are very lucky because, you know, we've been here in lockdown 38 days, or 30, probably we are like now on 39 or I don't know. I lost the count, to be honest. But, you know, the first 15 days, as I was telling you before, it has been the most nightmare because you thought it was just going to be 15 days and then to go out, but this just got extended and extended over and over again. It's just like the uncertainty or like not being sure of, and still as of today, not being sure when are you going to be able to go outside and how to go outside, because they're saying like, oh yeah, they're going to be out. Like, for example, Andorra has like from 7 in the morning till 10, you can go outside, and then from 7 p.m. But what are you going to do? Like, riders don't want to, like, you know, that's how we feel. Like, basically, it's like, it's not just being in lockdown and not being able to go outside. I am going to be so careful the day that they let me go outside, because the last thing I want to do is crash and finish on a hospital full of, like, people with coronavirus. So this is basically, like, just like the day by day right now is just being wake up and just, you know, being home and home and home and going to the supermarket once a week if you're lucky, and then that's about it. So I'm not gonna lie, I've been having some very bad struggling days, and I've been having some amazing non-stop dancing days, and you know, you just have to make the best out of it.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of ups and downs and ups again. And I think this is kind of, it's okay. You kind of get used to the situation. But as you said, not knowing when the situation ends is the hard part. So in Germany, they've just loosened the restrictions. So school might even start again in 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys and your government did it really good. They took the right decisions since the beginning, and not like us that we took the wrong decisions since the beginning. So Germany, it's one of the first economies in Europe, and you know, doing pretty well because of something. So I'm not gonna lie, but our government didn't help that much to all this like situation either, and why we are where we are right now. But that's politics.
Yeah.
Even there.
Yeah. But I also would like to say what you're doing. You are a community manager for Spain, for Komoot, which is really great because I also work with Komoot. and I would like to take this chance. Also, because this podcast is actually, I forgot to say, it's supported by Komoot as well, which is great. And this actually...
I didn't know that.
You didn't know, because
I can't remember.
Yeah, well, we've been planning to do this for such a long time. Remember when I first asked you, I think in the beginning of the year. Yeah, and then I didn't know that Komoot wanted to support this episode for a start, and now it all fits together perfectly.
Yes, super good, actually.
Yeah,
congrats.
Thank you. And yeah, but just for transparency, I would like to mention it, because we will of course talk a little bit about Komoot, and yeah, well, we won't talk bad about Komoot, of course, because
no. Why not? It's like, it has to be like a honestly podcast.
Your chance now, your chance.
Jokes.
Just joking. Exactly. But I like to be very transparent with sponsors. So yeah, that's why I mentioned it as well, that they're supporting it. And yeah, so besides this, you also own your own production company, which I also really find impressing. I asked you before whether you were a videographer or a photographer, and you said, oh, no, I like doing both, but I'm actually a producer. So, now I would like you to tell me more about the producing that you would like to do or that you're already doing.
You asked me if I was a videographer, photographer, and I said, no, I love doing that. I love doing both. I love filming and I edit and I do the music and I do all this. The process of filming is just, you know, it just takes so much steps that is amazing, and to piece together the work, the hard work that is behind it and everything. It's just like, I love it. And in photography, it's more like I love to travel and document what I really see. And I try to document like people that I meet or people like it's on the road and different, like, you know, faces. And I'm less of like a beautiful landscape photographer. I don't wait for the best light. You know, I just want to capture that moment. And even if I go in a car, or even if I go in on a bike, which is what my normal transport, because I don't even have a car license. I don't even know what I name it. But yeah, basically it's like, I just love documenting and I want to demonstrate what I see in my eyes. So it's just like a whole passion. I did not study anything. I'm not very freak of like looking in internet every single thing. I just look what it interests me. But then what I really like is to produce all these things. Not obviously every single shoot that I've been doing or every single filmmaking that I've been doing, it has been before produced. So you have to like plan it and think about it and think what's best and like contact people and go here and there. And obviously as well, like plan routes, because that's the main thing as I've been doing all by bike. So it's just all these little steps, pre-production, in the production, on the moment, and then post-production, which is like sort of engage me a lot. So I'll call myself, like, I want to like push this like production company, you know, aside of Komoot. I think it's a very good thing and it match really good with everything. And I can, you know, do both, and then just enjoy my bike at the same time. So, we could say I am more like a production side of all of this.
Yeah, sounds amazing. And I mean, I've been following you during the last years and I really like your work as well. I think your breakthrough was the movie about Route 66. Were you involved in the production then or were you just writing?
Actually, it's a good question. I wanted to write something about it the other day because I realized the same. No, that was like the hit point that turned it all my life. I was living in Berlin. I was working in the Rafa Clubhouse as a barista. So like head barista, like nothing. I did photos, but like just like normal and like, you know, with analog. But then I met Angus Morton and he just invited me to this trip as a woman that cycles, no? So I went there and I didn't know what I was going to. I just know that was like kind of a bit of a dream trip and a dream on the bike, which is, you know, amazing. So I went there and then he's like, here you go, a camera. You want to take photos? And then I took a couple of photos and he's like, oh, wow, you're really good at photos. Like, do you want to also shoot a little bit? And then obviously we were doing all from the bike. So on the, like 25 days on the bike, 25 days shooting, learned so much. But I was not producing anything there. I was just helping day by day. And then I was filming. So basically it was me and Gus and sometimes, Justin as well. Which both like three of us were just sharing a camera and shooting us while we ride. But yeah, that was the start of all this new sort of world for me, and I fell in love and I joined it.
Otskirts to, which was in Newfoundland, Labrador. And I did produce all of that shoot. And then we actually did afterwards, we did 15 days, but it never came out. And then I did produce the third Otskirts, which I was not, I was like maybe 2 seconds on it, but I did only the production for them. And I also joined the trip to like be sure that everything was online and set up for every single day with Lachlan, because he was training as well for nationals. I fell in love with that wall. And from there, I just like start doing production for many different brands. And now I've been producing for Wahoo, and I've been also filming for them. And I have many other projects coming up, as well with Jack. Jack, my friend, who is like doing like some crazy ultra things. So I'm producing all his films for this 2020. So yeah, I'm on it.
You definitely are. And I'm going to link all your website, of course, in the show notes, and maybe the most recent production. I saw that you did the one for Wahoo. You kind of filmed your life in quarantine. Yeah. And are there 3 episodes online now?
There are 5 at the end.
5, okay.
Yeah, but we were meant to do more, but it's just like, I'm not gonna lie, so hard to film the same person on the same house over and over again and try to be creative on every single time, you know? So we cut it up into 5, and then the next episode is gonna be when we are able to get out, this feeling of what is getting out. And then the big film, which is coming after right this, it's going to be a big challenge that Jack prepared around Girona, and just meeting people as well. And knowing what the people, you know, how they're feeling after all this happens, because I think it's changing all type of human anywhere in the world. So we want to see what they feel and how they feel, no matter if you are like the fruit man or the coffee man or the anything. So I'm looking forward for that one, because I think it's going to be very powerful and very like, you know, you can, yeah, it's going to be very beautiful.
It's a beautiful project to look forward to. I'm curious. How it's going to turn out, and yeah, what do you think? What are the biggest changes?
Many, like mental wise, people are going to be so, I'm going to say a bad word, but fucked up.
oh, now I don't know if I can say that in the podcast. Explicit language button on for the first time.
Oh, the beep.
It's great. Maybe it makes the podcast even more interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think like mental wise, it's going to be very hard, due to like, I don't know if you're going to even be able to give a hand to someone again, or a hug, or 2 kisses, like, you know, and then all the paranoia you're going to, or like people are going to have, like, you know, wearing masks in the street and like wearing masks everywhere. It just feels so uncomfortable and so like scared, like scary, sorry. Which I don't know. And then, I don't know if maybe the men that you normally used to see on your ride playing with his horse or dog, you know, in the middle of the village, the 80-year-old man is going to still be there. It's just going to, you know, I don't know. Headspace-wise is pretty bad. And then, I don't know, physically, I think a lot of people are going to take the outdoors for granted. Like, it's going to be amazing going outside, and people are going to take care, hopefully, of the planet, because that's exactly what we need. And that's why this is happening as well, I think. So, you know, you're going to go outside and you're going to take care of that nature that, you know, they're taking care of us. So yeah, that's, I don't know. We'll see. But, I want to be a bit surprised. So I don't want to think too much on it.
Yeah. I think, yeah, I agree. I think there will be many layers, and but I'm sure you will find, and how do you say it? You will explore these layers in the people. Yeah, cool, awesome project. now I'm jumping back into
you're back to Route 66. We were talking about this earlier, and looking at Route 66 as a turning point for your work, but also as an athlete, how did that change you?
That is also right. You have good questions.
Yeah, I did my homework.
Okay, yeah, I didn't do mine.
Oh, that's okay.
So yeah, as a turning point, it was completely different. Like, I was in Berlin, I was training hard and good. The guys from Standard, Maxi, who's like super strict on training, was training me. And you know, I was going to the gym and I was following like a schedule on the velodrome, and it was nothing that I am right now. And suddenly just like I went off to do my first more than 180 kilometers ride, and more like, more than any other year in my life, you know? I wanted to be a professional rider when I was in Berlin. I was even trying to go on that Swift Academy. And I remember Tanya going as well. And, you know, I was like, oh, motivational. Like, yeah, I can do this. But then, you know, this happened and it's just completely switched. I'm not going to call myself an ultra endurance athlete like you guys are, like you and Marion are like nuts going out and do TCR and all that. I'm not that kind of person. I'm more like, I love long distance, I love trips, but it has to be because of something. Like, I have to, you know, want to document that. Or we did this Christmas a trip in Bali, and it was because we wanted to do all these volcanoes and document all this for the tourism in Indonesia, no? So yeah, Route 66 me completely into a, I don't know, like a norm rider, I guess I call myself, like, or another type of rider. I even signed it for LA Swag. It is still in days of today, a racing women's team in the US. And I was not prepared for that. I was not ready. So after 3 months, because I couldn't rocked up after the trip of Route 66. So yeah, it just changed my life completely. And now I'm, you know, following that type of life instead of going back to the gear. Or like the crits or the racing. Well, no, I do race actually. Other type of racing.
What type of racing are you doing now?
So right now I sign up. I don't know if I can say that, but you know it in like maybe a month maximum. But we are doing a special level team, and it's gonna be like maybe happening or maybe not, because everybody's like on the limbo on this 2020, you know. We only do races of like 1-3 days maximum, stages races, but like not TR, not Silk Road, nothing of this, girls. Like just basically to Kansas, Rapidista, Belgian Waffle. If all this happens, we will do these races. The Rift Iceland, which I already did last year and it was amazing. So it's like 1 day races, and as I say, maximum 3 stage, because maybe I try some like mountain bike 3 stage races. But as I say, I don't know if this is going to happen.
So it sounds a little bit like the education first alternative racing, this part of the team.
That's funny. It's pretty similar, we could say, but there's no professional riders on this team. Like, there's nobody who's coming from a professional team to race.
Okay.
On alternative racing, it's more like we are all already alternative racers.
Yeah.
That cool. We are on this team. So there's no pro athletes. Well, if they want to call themselves pro athletes, they might be, but you know, I don't call myself a pro athlete. I'm just an alternative one, maybe.
you are what you want to be, Sami.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just here. Yeah, I'm me.
it sounds really great. So I keep my fingers crossed. If not this year, maybe next year. I mean, in Germany, I think everything until I think August got cancelled. At least the big things.
Yeah.
But, we'll just, keep our hopes high and,
exactly.
and see what happens. It sounds really great. So you are kind of, that's competition because I read an interview, with you from probably a year ago. 2019, I think summer 2019, and there you were asked where you don't want to be, and you said no competition. You're done with competition. And so I'm quite surprised that, I'm not, because I know exactly how you, but I can feel how you feel back then, and of course sometimes one just needs a break, and maybe it's also the type of competition. That's different. But do you remember that?
And I actually, that was, I think, it probably have been after Route 66. As I say, I was pretty over, and I tried to race Red Hook New York that year, and I was so cooked. And, you know, my performance was like, it was just, I think it was a week after, or like a week and a half after the Route 66. So it was like so close to that And I was like, no, I'm over this. I loved what I just did. You know, I loved the ball and I loved just going. And like with not knowing, we could say. So I didn't want to race again and I didn't want to compete again, but I said that so many times already, and then I always go back. After that I did do the Trans-Labrador Highway trip, and then after that I didn't race until Dirty Kansas last year, I did Milano, and then I didn't do until Dirty Kansas last year. We could say, and then I found Kansas, I didn't even like train. I was drinking like, a bottle of wine every night and I didn't train, and I was just living the life, you know, like having fun. But then I found that, and I was like, oh my God, this is sick. Even if I took more hours than I thought. And then after that, I went to, and I enjoyed it so much that I was like, okay, I sign up for anything that comes up now, and then I continue doing one after the other one.
Now you're saying, oh, you're just riding and taking photos, but this is not really true, because it's quite exhausting what you do, or quite hard, because you carry like all the camera equipment with you, so your bike weighs like 30 kilo. And maybe you don't do the same distance as you would do if you were an ultra endurance racer, but it's quite exhausting. So you do have to be trained for filming adventures as well, don't you?
Yeah, and like you're so right, because this year, you know, I joined this Scrabble team. And I was speaking to my friend Jack, who he sometimes helps people to coach, or like he's coaches himself, but somebody very important in Australia. And I was there, and I was like, oh, can you actually just help me not to do some crazy structure, but I just need to be fit enough to be able to hang with these girls, because the girls I have on the team, they're pretty fast. And I was like, I don't want to win, you know, I'm not here to win. I'm here to perform and document all this, what I'm going to do. So I want to be fit enough to do that. As you say, I want to be fit to like be able to get on a trip or get on a ride and be able to take photos at the same time that I ride, you know. But for that, it's not that I have to sit on the couch and just look at the sky every day. You need to like train a little bit and just
just a tiny bit. It doesn't have to be so crazy. It doesn't have to be like other people who race like ultra endurance races or whatever. It just has to be a bit enough that you just don't lose your fitness. That's how I will like call it.
So did he give you an advice how to do this?
Yeah, he's actually helping me weekly to train. So for the first time in my life and the second week in my life, I'm training with Watts.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's pretty funny because I just have no idea, you know, and it's because I am on the kicker. So you just set up your Watts and you just push and that's it. But I have no idea how that works out on the street.
We've been doing this all these years, Sami, and you haven't?
No. Yeah. It was very, like, never. Like, even in Red Hook, I remember that the LA Sweat had an amazing, like, Watts sponsor or, like, whatever. Yeah. And they gave me this bike with this Watts and all these, like, numbers on my computer and a new computer. I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, what is this? I don't know what is going on.
Yeah. So, and how do you like it now?
I mean, I can't tell you because it's inside. So it's like very easy. Like I found like you just set it up and then you just do it. But then the first day it was so hard. I was like, are you sure these numbers are right? Because I'm pushing more than I should be pushing. You know, I don't know if I was training my heart rate, which I like it a lot because it, you know, it's just, you can set up your own cadence. And I'm somebody that loves cadence. Like I will go, I don't even know the cadence numbers, but like, you know, I'm somebody who like, I like spinning more than be like super grinding. So, In the watts, you can't choose your cadence. You have to push the watts, so it sucks. I don't like it that much. I'm not gonna. Lie.
You can, but then you still have the same watts. I mean, you just pedal faster, and it gets a bit easier. But it's really hard because especially indoors,
it's very hard.
That's fun. So do you do more intervals now, or what does he let you do?
Not that much. I'm not so intervals, like short intervals. I'm more like long endurance and like with some little peaks, just to not lose the performance. But you know, it's indoors, so the maximum I've done it's like 2 hours. And that was fine. More than enough. But yeah, I can't. I don't know how it's gonna feel on the street yet. But I'll probably.
Yeah, it's great because you get a great feeling for what you need to push, and what most people realize is that they once outside, inside is difficult, but once outside, that they usually go too fast, that they ride the intervals too fast, that they're already too much of the red zone, and especially the long rides where you want to ride for 3-4 hours, that they usually do them too fast and push too many watts. That's what, yeah, most people that start using a power meter ride slowlier. And yeah.
Okay.
It's interesting.
Good to know.
Yeah, because we tend to ride too fast. And yeah, I mean, your training should be... Well, I mean, you have a coach and he will tell you all about it. Yeah. And yeah, cool.
I'm trying to follow Ned for the first time ever a program. Yeah. So
it's a good, but I mean, it's a good thing to start now that you're at home, and it gives you some structure too. I mean,
yeah, no, I did it since like the beginning of the year now. So I did my first race this year, which was a mountain bike race here in Girona. And I had some like stomach issues from Bali still on that day. So I couldn't finish it. But, you know, in terms of, performance, the day before, like all the days before and everything, I was feeling a lot better and I was feeling more confident. And I guess what training gives you sometimes is a bit more confidence of like, okay, you train it for it, you can do it, you can go up and like, you know, go for it. And I did some, as I say, I did all last year without training. I was just like riding however I wanted. And then, you know, because of fixed gear, you know that you have to sort of do like some intervals or some kind of like wake up legs the days before. And, you know, that's what I kind of did. And then I just went for it. but yeah, this year, yeah, I feel like if the lockdown ends, I am very curious about how it's going to be my performance in the street, because I've never been training indoors in my life, I say as well. So, good weather all year long. So we don't, if it rains one day, we don't care. We just stay home and chill. You know, I had the kicker for like 3 years, I think. And this is the first time I've used it.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. You will probably be faster than ever before.
Or maybe like I will not even. I thought about putting like the two little wheels, like the babies, you know, like the little child that have the two wheels on the side, because I don't know if my balance is gonna be still on.
Yeah. Yeah. You will manage.
Let's see.
But great to hear. I mean, that's a way to go through all this now, to look forward to a team, to maybe racing, even if it's postponed a little bit. Yeah, sounds really great. And yeah, but I was curious about your work as a community manager for Komoot now in Spain, because if people aren't allowed to ride outside, what can the community do?
that has been the topic.
Oh, okay.
Everybody. No, it's a good question. So I joined at Komoot beginning of July last year. And, you know, for me, Komoot was still not in Spanish, but I was already the community manager from Spain. And it was interesting how we developed it here in Spain, as, you know, the week that we came on lockdown, it was when we launched it. It's community in Spanish. It was going to full on weekend party with guys from Rocacorva and the service course. And, you know, like it was just going to be like the weekend. And then this happened.
Oh, really?
So,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So for me, it has been heartbreaking, all of this, because it has been a lot of work from all the team of Komoot into like the launch of in Spanish, and then that didn't happen. So obviously, like, it's sort of a bit, you know, hard. It's just hard to overcome something that you've been working for quite a while. And then now it's just, what was the question again?
Yeah, your job as a community manager in Spain now.
Yeah,
like, what can you give to the community now? That,
yeah, I mean, so the first things were like, you know, we launched it in Spain, so we have to like get this community built up. And it has been hard, I'm not gonna lie, because you want to go outside and show the people how it works. You don't just want to show it on the computer, you know. Komoot is not just like a platform that you plan in the computer and that's about it. It's just like it gives a lot more. So you kind of want to show all this to the people, but you can't do it because they can't execute it outside. And it's just, yeah, we've been doing webinars in all the languages, which there has been amazing. And I saw yours.
You did? Oh, okay. Yeah.
I popped in and I asked some questions, but I had no idea about German. So I didn't answer. I didn't know much, but it was just fun to watch you guys.
It was amazing. It was my first webinar and I loved it. It was so cool.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. It's a pretty cool concept. As we say, like, everybody's adapting to the situation, and not just the companies, but everybody else. So we're a company that we're 70 or like nearly 80. I can't remember now how many we were working, and we're working remotely. So our like thing is being remotely. So this, for us, it doesn't feel strange. It feels a bit more readjustable and normal. So we are doing, as I said, webinars, we're doing Instagram lives. We're doing a bit like bits and pieces that still keeps the core community active. And what, like all this time that you normally were thinking, oh, I need, you know, I don't have time to plan. Now you have time to plan. So why not plan 8 million routes, even if you're not going to do it? Just plan them. Who knows what's going to happen afterwards, you know? So as soon as, I think like for me, it's like as soon as they let me off, I have to choose in between like 20 routes that I plan and think about what it's the best I'm going to do. But I don't care. Like I'll do it, you know? So yeah, just discovering like your country, which I've been somebody who I've lived here since 2 years ago in Girona, but I didn't know Girona or either was like anywhere around before much because I've been living all around the world. And it's like, why not to discover your country now that it's going to be probably, you can't travel for a while. So it's perfect time for that. And then you'll see how beautiful it's not just Spain, but like Germany or Italy or France or like everything, you know, your country.
Yeah.
And culture.
You're exactly right. And I'm experiencing the same here in Hamburg. I mean, we are allowed to ride outside, but much more people are riding or walking or running. And yeah, it's my first, prediction to the future is that there will be much more people on bikes after all this. And, secondly, we all have to find new routes because our routes that we've always been riding are too busy now. it's a funny effect.
Exactly. And like, there was some sort of partner or shop in Netherlands, that they were doing this amazing collection about the routes that you will never take and now you take, you know, so secondary routes as the normal route that you will do. Like here in Girona, we have like the 5 typical loops. Why not to take the non-typical loops, but still do that loop, you know what I mean? So like that back roads and all of this. So yeah, I plan a couple of those, like a couple of like avoiding all this, like everyday route and everyday rides that we normally do.
Yeah, same here. And yeah, it's great to be able to look around on the platform because, I mean, Commute also shows you other nice routes. And yeah, I'm also making collections where I avoid certain parts of Hamburg or certain parts on the dike. So where everybody is riding right now. Yeah. Yeah. So my friend from Leipzig, they are only allowed to ride, they're not allowed to ride further away than 15K from where they live. So they started like making and planning loops around their house.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I do run around my house because I have a balcony, and I can open 2 windows in 2 different rooms. So then I can do a circle, and every morning I wake up now and I run 7 minutes. I do 20 planks. I do however many push-ups I can and some other stuff that I can't remember the name of it. So yeah, I'm going pretty crazy too.
So you're doing inside your apartment, you're doing the yes. oh this is even yeah this is next level shit.
Yes, probably.
Do you have to record that maybe?
I know. I wanted to do a well, you probably see, but I wanted to do this weekend a fake triathlon at my place.
Yeah, great.
I have a bath so I can swim. I can run and I can ride.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. And then we all explore our next neighborhood, I'd say. Maybe the further we can go, the further we go and explore. And I'm completely with you that I'm able to plan routes now that I can look forward to when all this is maybe over one day.
Exactly.
Yeah. What's the Spanish government saying? Do they have an end date for this, or how's the communication?
I think the last end date was the 10th, but the thing is going to be like the 10th, you might be able to go 1 hour outside, and then the 15th, you might be able to go 2 hours outside. Or I don't know how they're going to, like, well, I have no idea, to be honest. They did a little program about like how like the evolution of everything and the businesses and stuff. But it says, like, for example, that cinemas and theaters are not going to open until December. December. It's crazy. It's like, it's nuts.
That is a long time. That's true. Yeah.
December. Yeah. So yeah. We'll see. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically waiting and waiting for also for the numbers to come in. I mean, in Germany, they're really good at monitoring the infection rates, and they will make decisions on how fast the curve is going up. And I think then they are changing decisions again. And one thing I also read in an interview, I'm jumping back now again, is that you told the interviewer about a story when you were riding 30Ks by yourself at a speed of 32K because you were angry at your group and you just rode away. What happened then? When was it? Was it during the Route 66 trip?
No, actually, that was the second one.
Okay.
Highway. Oh, you probably hear some bells and clapping now, because we every day at 8 p.m. we clap for all the workers that have been working during the day. So maybe it's a bit noisy, but my windows are closed. Yeah, so all the country and all, like entire world, you can, you go outside in the window and you clap. So to say thank you so much to all the workers that have been working during the day. It's pretty nice and very beautiful.
Yeah.
What I was saying, sorry, that part there, you can see it on the film as well. And it's thereabouts, outskirts Translabrador Highway, which I did not enjoy that trip, I'm not going to lie. It was a sin and me, so a bit of too much, balls in there. and that did not make me feel, I was not there for, like, I was there producing, but I was not there just to, make the food of every single man. I was, I was feeling a bit, there was a bit of a machismo, you can call it. And that day I just, like, one of the guys came to me, I'm not going to name it, one of the guys came to me and he's like, are you sure you're going to be able to do this? And I was like, what did you just ask? And I went to Gus and I was like, what is this guy telling me? Like, are you crazy? Do you think this is normal? Like, how does he think I'm not going to... Okay, yeah, my knee was painful, but, I am here and I'm going to make it. So I freaked out and I say, okay, you want to see if I can make it? So I went out off 30 kilometers by myself and 30-something average on proper gravel, not like shit gravel or like packed gravel. That was like gnarly stone gravel. And I went off. I was like, but I enjoyed it a lot. And due to that, I had to also quit because I had to also leave the trip because I didn't broke my knee, but I overcook it and I had to stop. I couldn't continue, but it was the right choice because to be honest, it felt like I was just holding to three ex-pro cyclist riders, and I was not able to like hold up. I mean, are you kidding me? I'm not a pro cyclist. Like, I've never been even in a half of the level of this. Our guys were just, like, averaging 30 every day all the time, and that's what they wanted to do, just go fast. So it was very hard. Yeah, it's not something that I enjoyed. But I demonstrated just for 30 kilometers that women can also do it when they want, you know, and when they can. And I'm pretty sure, like, a lot of women, if they didn't have the knee pain that I had, they would have been able to hold until the end of the trip. But that was not the end. We did, after one of the things as well, I jumped on that car afterwards. It's because there was no way to get out of that island or that place without like maybe $10,000 in your pocket. And we had to complete 15 more days back to the Labrador City by bike, unsupported. And also with Nico and Chas, what they are also fixed gear racers. And we did 15 more days, and we also filmed all of that with three cameras. We transport everything. And I knew that I had to do that because I couldn't leave. Gus couldn't make it by himself, basically. So yeah, that's why I also stepped in the car and just had 3 days of chill.
And now I have two questions. One is, why were you the only woman?
Because that's a good question. I'm not sure, but basically, you know, at that time I was like hanging out with Gus, and he's like, oh yeah, maybe it's just much easier if you just come and, you know, produce it. And I don't know, he chose the people. So maybe he was the problem.
Okay, but it could have been that, I mean, you asked five women and they all said no, or you asked no woman was asked. I just sometimes wonder, because often you, in those movies, you see just one woman. And yeah, I always wonder, why is that the case?
Well, we had a bad experience on Route 66 by Bruin to drive a car, because that woman just did my life hell, basically. So, long story short, it was after that experience, it was maybe better, but I was super happy to bring another athlete. We just couldn't find in a short term somebody else, because the people who were coming on the trip in the very beginning, they followed up 2 weeks before the trip, so we had to change completely everything, and nobody could come. And I think I did approach a couple women, but they were not available on that time. But yeah, in another side, if it was some, like a woman, like the one on Route 66, I prefer if it was just men, you know.
Yeah, but if you have a man who like talks bullshit, I mean, it's the same. Then you to say, oh, I prefer just women. I mean, there's always strange people.
Yeah,
yeah, but
it's not easy.
And my other question is that, especially in this trip, if I remember correctly, part of it was with a car and the support crew, and the other part was by yourself. So what do you prefer?
So the first 15 days and the one that the film is on is with a car, yes. And then, as I said before, we did 50 more days with no car, and I do prefer the no car. Like, I enjoyed it so much. It's like zero logistics. You can just do whatever you want, stop whenever you want, you know. You just ride all together. There's nothing, there's nobody who's like just hanging next to you and hanging out the window and filming you, or like, not even that, but just like trying the logistics of like, okay, let's do this or let's do that, or like you have to, you know, manage more people and you're not sort of like, and also when you approach people sometimes it was a bit like too much when there's like six or like this, like a whole crew coming out of a car. So we did enjoy a lot more the second part, and I like it a lot more by ourselves. Like, that's why I did that Indonesian trip. We just like did it two people and we stopped everywhere and, you know, did our rhythm and whatever we wanted.
Yeah, I can totally feel you. And just so we kind of have an idea, how long are the daily distances if you do it completely unsupported with all your equipment on the bike, time to film? So how many kilometers do you actually do per day?
We try to average 100 Ks a day, yeah.
Well, that's still a lot. I mean,
we had to arrive on time to an airplane. which it was very, like, what it was very interesting is like, first of all, like, Nico and Chas are the best couple to hang out to do a trip like this. It's so easy. So, like, such a great guys to just hang on. So the days were, like, super fun with them. And then the last 580 kilometers, we only had three stops and it was all gravel. And when we arrived to the one stop before, there's a guy who came to us and he's like, oh my God, you guys are here. Like, I met you the first day you left the Labrador town. And we were like, oh wow, really? And they're like, yeah, but you guys should keep going. Like, there's a massive storm coming up. And you know, you're like, we were in Labrador City, which is like the highest city in Canada. And we had to, like, our goal was like arrive to Fermont, which is like a mined city. And it's very weird. It has like a 7 kilometer building, which everybody does their life inside. So it's like imagine all your apartments together and you never go outside. And it was like a wall. It was weird. So we ended up in Fermont, which is the border from Quebec to Labrador. And it was all in French. And I remember it was like 60 kilometers an hour, full on like snowstorm. And we were just there in the middle of the wild, you know, like trying to push and arrive to that town. And then we stopped there, we slept. And then the next day we arrived to Labrador City. But I tell you, like, we slept under like a workers, like a highway workers house. I'll send you some photos so you can understand all this, because it was amazing. It was so cool, but it was really hard. The last stretch was like so lonely and so hard.
Yeah, I can imagine. And the other days you stayed outside or in hotels?
Sorry, we were carrying all our camping gear. And at the same, we were mixing and we were saying one day on a hotel, one day on a campground, one day on a hotel or a motel or whatever it is there, depending what we found, no? But that last four nights, we did it in like 580 kilometers, we did it in 4 days. And basically we stayed once in a motel, and then two times on like a, it was a scene. It was like amazing to mine. One was a mine place and the other one was a how do you say it? Manik Sang. It was a dam, sorry. It was a dam workers place. So like, you know, like construction workers, like, where they normally sleep for a day and go back to town, and that's where we were staying. And then we had to camp on the highway on like this little like shelter that we found and like cabin. But yeah, it was a mix between like camping and sleeping on good beds.
So what's the most difficult thing, or what do you have to keep in mind when you take all the equipment with you? Is it like the batteries that
don't last forever, or what's difficult about like bringing your own equipment, camera wise, to the trip?
Just remember to charge the batteries every night, you know, because you're tired, you arrive there, you're hungry. It's sort of like a bit of routine. You have to keep the same steps every day to not forget about it. Obviously, do not forget your camera, or do not forget your stuff in the room or in the tent, because in the tent, the camera can fly. It didn't happen to me with the camera. I think it did happen to me with something. I can't remember what. But yeah, it's just like some small things. Obviously, like, you know, you have the camera on your hand and you're riding your bike, so you have to just be a bit careful about like just not dropping it. I can't think the most like difficult stuff. I don't really know, like the most dangerous. I don't know. That's all I will say.
Do you leave a kit behind to be able to take more equipment for filming, or what's the ratio?
I literally just took, because we knew that we were going, we were taking all types of climate on this trip, on the last one, no? So we were like on 30 degrees or 32 degrees, I think it was one day. No t-shirt, you know, like bib shorts, and that was it. And then we arrived to a -6 degrees on the town, full on like snowstorm, 60 kilometers an hour wind. So we touched every single climate on this trip, snow, rain, everything. So you have to wear one item from each. So I was wearing a long bib short and a short bib short, and that was it. Like, and then my t-shirts that I was wearing three, I think, or no, sorry, I was wearing two, and it was like, I would wear them on the bike and off the bike. my gear will not change that much on and off. I will wear one pant, and I like will wear maybe two underwear. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I can imagine that.
Yeah, we were like, I remember we were having two hard drives, because we had two hard drives, two Sony cameras, and then one drone, plus all the batteries and the cable. So quite a few things.
It is. And yeah, what I've noticed when taking cameras with me is that the constant bumping of the street can damage the camera. Have you had problems like this?
What do you mean?
So if a camera is completely, because you ride over gravel, and if the camera is sensitive when it comes to shaken around.
So sensitive. If I see now 66, it's like, what are we doing? Like, it's so shaky. It's like terrible, you know. But in another side, I'm thinking like, oh, that's actually good that I see that, because it means that, you know, I'm sort of like learning about that thing. So yeah, it's very, very bad.
Yeah, but this is when you're filming, and I guess you get used to it, and you can have a stabilizer. But on the bike, when the camera is in your bag, and it's bumpy, then the technology can get damaged within the camera. You know what I mean?
Yes. Now I know what you mean. So I'm not going to lie, if you buy a good camera and you spend money on a good camera, you will never have that problems. And I've been having the Sony RX7. The Sony AR7. And we had Sony AR 7 III, and we never ever had a problem.
Okay, that's good to know, because I was always like a little bit hesitant to put it in my bag, and I rather had it on my body, because then you can kind of save it a little bit.
Yeah, I've been having it in both, and nothing. Like, I have the front bag, which I put the camera, and I normally also strap, which I put it in my bag. And I've never had a problem. And I tell you, I probably had done some gnarly trails as well with that backpack, like that camera on my back.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Yeah. So now everyone is probably confused. So now the three films that all of those who are listening right now have to watch. Your films, not other people's films, yours, that you've been part of. So it's probably Route 66.
I would not recommend any of the old kids.
I really loved it, the Route 66.
Yeah, you know,
it's your, you have to tell your best three.
It's very hard because, you know, I'm not a fan of any of now, as the experience I've had is not that. So it's amazing where I've been, but, you know, some sort of like, you know, boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, me, and like some sort of issues in the middle, which they don't make me just feel like, okay, yeah, go and watch it. If people like it, just go and watch it. You know, like I'm not going to say anything, but, you know, I'm not a fan because I actually did not have a nice time. But yeah, it's I don't know. It's very, I don't know how to explain it. Best films you can watch. You can watch the Chris Burke film of the Arctic sky surfing. You can watch Free Solo.
Free Solo is amazing. Yeah.
Oh, man. You can watch, you know, many other films. No, but to be honest, I think the best and like most unique film, it's the first thereabouts, and there's not going to be anything like that again, even if Gus will keep trying and Lachlan as well. I think that's the essence of everything that's happening now. It's the same as, like, for example, in Fixed Gear, when Dos Noventa started, all remember they started all that, like, films, and, like, they just changed the idea of the Fixed Gear, and then Red Hook came as well, and that was, like, the boom. Yeah, I don't know. Go and watch the crazy ones of Jack as well, like my friend Jack, ultra cyclist on Instagram, which he does like fucking nuts stuff, and like he does like three Everestings on 3 days in three different countries, or like Taiwan KOM 4 times. So like I actually filmed one which is going to be released very soon, and he did Girona to Portugal in 52 hours with no sleep. So, you know, like this kind of things, I think it's like, wow, you can watch. The other stuff is like, I don't know. There's so many like bads in YouTube and so many good ones that I don't know how to take it.
Well, Sami, thank you so much. I think we can all relate to this looking back and maybe having some, yeah, personal yeah, things that influence what yeah, we like and what we don't like. And you mentioned,
like, everybody, I'm
yeah, this is life. And
like what's your favorite trip and what's your worst trip?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's funny, like, what the parameters are that you choose to make a group great or not. And sometimes it's the worst trip that turns out to be the best. I mean, we've all been there, or the
yeah,
hardest.
And the hard always have to be in front of camera and fake it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that was the hardest part of actually Route 66, more than any of them. It was an amazing trip. I will not change anything. And you can see it on the film. We meet all these people and everything, but, you know, on the back of that film, there was other stuff happening, and you, like, people can't see it because, as I say, it's a film and you can always edit. It's the same as this podcast. You can always edit it.
Yeah, I will, yeah, this is.
So, yeah, it's, you know, yeah, it's,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's it.
That's all I have to say. No, we won't go deeper into this.
No, nope, no.
Is there anything you want to say? Maybe you would like to say something that I haven't asked you?
Well, I I don't know, like, I guess one of my biggest motivations in cycling as well, and that's why I've always wanted to transmit, and I don't know if I've been doing it right or not, you might tell me, but it's real, like, it's really encouraging women to go out and ride no matter what. I've been, you know, riding all types of bikes, mountain bikes, gravel, fixed gear and road, and it's just, you know, going out and riding no matter the bike, no matter where you are, that it just makes it just like an amazing journey, you know? And now I'm appreciating that more than any, like, any time in the world. And I think that's what makes me more happy. Like, just when I look at my social, like, at the social media, I look at, like, anything, it's just all these other women that, you know, are riding around the world. It's like, just keep doing it no matter what, because that's the most beautiful thing I think you can do right now, is just being in the outdoors. So, yeah, I think, like, I have a couple plans of, like, doing things for women and, like, not podcasts, but something similar. So you might be on my loop as well. But it's just, you know, it's just, have to adapt to this world, so let's just do it and, you know, take for granted the nature and the landscapes and everything and just go on out and ride as much as we can.
Yeah.
That's it.
Perfect. I think we all appreciate it, and yeah, this is be brave, go outside and yeah, do your thing, I guess. Yeah.
Exactly. Stay safe.
Yeah.
Don't put other ones in risk. Just, you know.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. Cool. Sami, thank you so much. All the best to you. I will watch your channels and I will, of course, link everything we talked about it in the bio. I may ask you to send me some links over. And yeah, I think this was great input from... Yeah, Spain's community manager for Komoot and owner of her own production company, Sami Sauri Production, also on Instagram, and I will also link it. And yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me today and for this chat. It's been great.
Yeah, and I'm glad we talked about the past again and clarified some crash issues.
That's maybe not going to happen again.
I hope not, no. Yeah, and if, then it's us two who crash into
each other. Exactly, All right, okay, hope to ride with you soon and yeah. Take care.
Yeah, we have to. It's been too long.
Yeah. Too long.
Okay, bye, Sami.
Bye-bye, thank you.